Well, hi, everyone. Andy Asher here, and thank you for joining me in this session of the Bloomer Boomer podcast. Today's episode features husband and wife Richard and Amy Lynn, who describe themselves in the title of their new book, The Sarcastic Lens, An Ordinary Couple's Photographic Journey Through the Animal Kingdom. Richard, a retired corporate attorney, and Amy works as a medical technologist. So without further ado, let's find out about them and what they're doing. Now, thanks for joining us. I've seen some of the pictures in it, and they're really cool, from the gaping mouth of a lion to a meerkat in Botswana hitching a ride on Richard's head. So this time, this show is going to be published. You guys are turning 62. So, Amy, I'll ask you, why a book now?
You know, through our whole life, people have been saying, do a book, and we, of course, said, no, nobody wants to, you know, see a book. And then you become 60 and, like, your brain disengages. And we said, let's do a book. And the book became sort of what we hoped as an inspiration to other people, because we think we're just, you know, two schmoes from New Jersey who got up off the couch and took our camera. And we were able to do all these amazing things and have all these amazing experiences and take all these incredible photos without being professional photographers, without, you know, sitting in a hide for 3 weeks, you know, like professional photographers do, and the stories that go along with them. So we think it's kind of unique in the sense that it's sort of praising the little man and saying, look, you can do this too. Look what we did. You know, you can go out there and do it. And, you know, all you have to do is really get up and go.
Kind of a metaphor for doing a lot of other things in life if you just get up and do it, isn't it?
Right, if you just get up and do it, right. It doesn't even necessarily obviously have to be animal photography, but I think a lot of people are intimidated by these kinds of adventures. And, you know, I've had 3 knee replacements. I had breast cancer. And, you know, people can do these things. You don't have to be an Olympic athlete. You don't have to be a professional photographer, like we said. But you need more than just a cell phone. I mean, you need a legitimate, you know, camera and stuff. But people should not be intimidated by these things and say, oh, I'd love to do this, but I could never do it. You can. You can really go to these places and really get these incredible experiences. People should not be, you know, turned off by that at all.
Now, you talk about being ordinary people, and that can mean a lot depending on where anybody is in life, but what are ordinary people like?
What are ordinary people like? Well, I don't know. How ordinary would you say we are, Richard? Richard's retired. He's been retired for about 10 years now. I'm still working. I'm a medical technologist. I work in a hospital. You know, we lead a pretty normal lifestyle. You know, we're not really... you know, I think anybody, you know, is special in the sense that, you know, that we would be more equipped to do this book than anybody else.
Well, we're not famous.
Right, we're certainly not famous. Not yet.
We live an everyday life. We have two children and a dog, like a lot of people in the United States, certainly. And it's all based on that concept that we're not professionals. We don't take tripods. We don't use Photoshop. We do work with computers, but it's not. These are not in zoos. They're not retouched. They're not redone. These are experiences that we actually had, and that any person with the desire to go out and do it can realistically do.
So, Richard, tell me what separates your book or makes it different than other coffee table type books that are out there, or even images people can get on the internet.
You know, it's our opinion that if you go on the internet these days, you can find a great picture of almost any animal, any individual animal, but we've managed to compile them all in one place. And as we like to say, there's more animals than Noah had on his ark in the book, and they're from all 7 continents. A lot of the animals that you're familiar with, like elephants and giraffes, and many that you wouldn't know, but we would dare most normal people to come up with any animal that isn't in the book. And I think that's different than a lot of wildlife books, because a lot of wildlife books are either based on one species or one part of the world. It's very difficult to find one that has this kind of variety of animals in it. And of course, the second point is that it's lighthearted. It's not just a treatise on, you know, facts about the animals. But it is somewhat educational, but just kind of in a quick and amusing way. But that's, you know, that's, of course, the title of the book is meant to show that it's lighthearted and it's humorous and maybe even sometimes sarcastic. And to that end, that's my wife's thought process on the cover of the book, which is a meerkat in Botswana sitting on my head, which is, again, kind of thematic of the book.
you bring a sense of humor and I guess sarcasm is somewhat part of your personalities, I gathered. Is that?
Yeah, very much so. I think you have to have a pretty good sense of humor. I think if people are going to go and do a lot of these trips, you have to have a pretty good sense of humor. You can't be a very rigid type of person to have a lot of these experiences.
I would argue that while we may not be able to compete with professional photographers on a photo-by-photo basis, we could compete with anybody on sarcasm.
Yes, I think that's definitely true. We're professional sarcastics.
So I take it that maybe your sarcasm came in handy when things didn't go right or planning failed, or how did sarcasm come into play?
As I say in the introduction, one of the good things about wildlife is that you can insult it and make fun of it, and it really doesn't know you're doing that. It doesn't yell at you or talk back to you. So yes, we do use that as a means of of enjoying the trips. Yes.
And are you another thing that would be required? I would think to do what you're doing is being pretty good travelers, pretty experienced, savvy travelers. Now, is that the case? And not everybody has that capability to be able to.
Well, obviously, we are now because we've been doing this a long time. We've been to 40 or 50 countries and had a lot of experiences. But I think even early on, we were pretty easygoing in the sense that we were pretty willing to go with the flow. And, we're not the type of people that have to have fancy food or a certain kind of wine with dinner. Or if I have to go 2 days without showering, it didn't drive me insane. I think a lot of people cannot do that. And I'm a big believer in the fact that you should own your own vacation. If you want to go and sit on a beach and read all day, even though that would drive me insane, if that's what you want to do, that's what you should do. But if you've always wanted to do these kind of trips and have been intimidated to do them, our point is you shouldn't be. A lot of people say, well, I can't walk very well. How would I get around? How would I do, these things like that? When you go to a camp in Botswana or other places in Africa, you get in a Jeep, and they drive you all around, and you see all these great things from the seat in a Jeep. You don't have to walk anywhere. In fact, you can't walk anywhere because, something might eat you.
Yeah.
So, people who I think that they can't do these things really can.
So has age become any barrier? And, how old are you guys?
We are both going to be 62 the end of May and beginning of June.
Amy's the end of May. She's
yes,
sorry.
I'm the end of May. I'm 2 weeks older. I never stopped thinking about it.
I'm sure that's the truth.
A huge sensitive point. But yeah, we're both going to be 62.
Any other adventures like this planned?
Oh, yes, lots of adventures.
Well, we have a second book in the works on the top 100 destinations of the world, which we're kind of working on at the same time. And that we're about 90% of the way done with that, but we still have a couple steps to take in order to finish that book as well.
Where did this passion of yours come from?
I think the whole thing really grew out of our love of wildlife. We have a bear that frequents our front yard, and, when that happens, it's like the most exciting thing that happens to us still. When the word bear yells out from somebody, everybody, runs to get the camera. Everybody's glued to the window. I don't think that that's something you can fake or pretend to be into. I think you're really excited about that, and you really want to do these things as opposed to saying, well, yeah, we went to Europe or we went to Africa because, you're checking it off a bucket list just as something to do. I mean, this project really grew out of a love of all these things and a real desire to have these experiences. As something, with the two of us, we're just very lucky. That's we're very different people. Obviously, you don't know us, but we're really very different people. But we really came together over this love of wildlife, just this common interest really as something that we've really been able to share and now hopefully share with a lot of other people. And I think Richard's right. He makes the point about the book is it's got a lot of great pictures in it, you know, and the pictures, you know, it's been fun collecting those pictures and everything. But it's really more than that. It's really what we like to say, to come for the pictures but stay for the stories. You know, each picture has a story behind it of how we got there or what happened when we were there or why we thought the whole thing was so absurd. You know, like the whole meerkat on the head thing. You know, there's a whole story behind that. So I can't say that we said, all right, you know, we're going to be inspired and live our life this way or whatever. It really just came out of a great love of wildlife.
How do you face the obstacles in undertaking an adventure like this? There's going to be health, there's going to be time issues, and there's going to be financial issues, to name a few.
Well, I think there is certainly there has to be some financial stability. I mean, a lot of these trips are not inexpensive. So I don't want to, you know, pretend that they're, you can do all these things if you have a very limited budget. That's certainly not the case. Well, but I think Amy is right that health is not as big a deterrent, because a lot of these trips can be done even by people who are not in the best of health. And we've traveled with many people who are not in the best of health. And as Amy mentioned, she's had a lot of health setbacks. So I don't really think that's a deterrent.
And, of course, there's a lot to see in the United States. You know, you don't have to go to Africa or some other, you know, other continent to have a great wildlife experience. You know, our big thing is, you know, we went to all 50 states before we went out of the country because we felt it was important to see our own country before we, you know, went other places. And we had a lot of great wildlife experiences in the national parks. You know, that's, you know, we kind of work off these lists of things to do, and one of our big hopes is to try and get to every single national park. We're pretty close, but we still have a few left to do. But, you know, if you go to, let's say, Moab, Utah, which is one of my favorite places on Earth. Everybody always asks us that question, you know, what's your most favorite place? You can spoke off to like five of the greatest natural sites in the world. You know, the United States has some of the most beautiful landscapes and wildlife areas of anywhere in the world. So people shouldn't think that you have to go outside the U.S. You know, I know a lot of people are afraid of flying outside the U.S. or maybe even flying in general these days. And stuff, and you can have a great wildlife experience in your own backyard. We certainly do.
And for the gearheads out there like myself, tell us a little bit about the equipment that you use.
Well, you need a decent camera. You don't need, you know, the world's largest Hubble telescope kind of lens, but you need a legitimate single lens reflex camera. You can't just take it with a cell phone or an iPad or even just a point and shoot because of the delay. You need an SLR because you need that quickness. You need that speed when you're shooting wildlife, because the thing about wildlife is it's all about timing. You know, in 1 second, you can have the world's greatest picture, and in 2 seconds, the animal has disappeared. So you do need legitimate equipment. So we have Nikons. We've been shooting Nikons. And, of course, once you buy the lenses for Nikons, you're hooked into Nikons, you know, pretty much. For the rest of your life, so that's sort of how we just keep perpetuating and upgrading, you know, to better Nikons as they come out.
And you guys must be pretty courageous to be able to get up close to some of those wild beasts.
Well, the predators in Africa don't have a lot of fear, so you can get very close to them in jeeps, obviously, not on foot, and you're amazingly close to them. They're actually a lot easier to shoot than the prey, but the prey is afraid of everything, so including the jeep. So they're difficult to get facing you, because every time anything comes close to them, they start to run away. But there really isn't a lot of difficulty in that shooting a lion once you find them. The hardest part is finding them. And as ferocious as that is, it's probably just between you and us. It's probably a yawn, not a growl.
Right.
People often don't realize that it's harder to shoot antelope and warthogs than it is to shoot, you know, the mega animals, because the mega animals, you know, aren't fettered by you at all.
And just the fact of facing wild animals at the end of the line is enough of fear for anyone to deal with, but others, you know, fear just the simple fact of traveling to new parts of the world.
We don't really have a lot of fears in this regard. I would say Well, I would say that we talk to a lot of, we don't have a lot of friends who actually are want to do this kind of travel, and many of them are afraid, and we can't seem to convince them otherwise, but most of the places that we go, unless you have a fear of flying, I mean, obviously you need to fly to these places, but I have to say that most of the places that we go to, you don't even, you know, lock your doors, or they're very out, away from any sort of fear factor in my mind. In fact, they're kind of the safest places, because they're so away from the madding crowd that I find that I rarely feel as secure and as safe as when we travel to these kinds of places. And we live right by New York City, and I worked in New York City for 20-some-odd years, and so I enjoy being away from the crowds and that kind of tumult when we vacation. And in fact, as a tease for our next book, I will tell you that you know, one of the places we went to was Bali, which everybody has as, you know, one of the great destinations in the world, and we found it to be very overcrowded and not really
very commercialized,
not
very
really
crowded.
Not really our favorite. If you want to go to a Pacific island, it was way, you don't want to be stuck in traffic, and that's one of the things that we like about these places is you're away from all that commotion.
We like being off the grid, so that really was never a problem for us. We're not afraid of flying, which I know a lot of people are. We're not afraid of flying outside the country, which I know a lot of people do have, you know, concerns about that. We weren't afraid of going to places that were, you know, and don't forget, we did a lot of these things way before cell phones, email, you know, any of this stuff where you could be in contact with people. And that didn't really bother us. We drove all around the country, just the United States alone, and got into some amusing situations. And you weren't anywhere near a payphone, and you didn't have a cell phone. And, you know, we figured it out. We had a map. We had common sense. Maybe we have a bigger sense of adventure than most people. I don't know.
Or maybe we didn't have common sense.
Yeah. Maybe we're stupider than we realized. But we didn't seem to, you know, we had our sense of humor, and it's like, well, what are we going to do? We got some terrible flat tire in some preserve in Alaska. We were driving around there, and we totally shredded a tire, and neither one of us knows how to change a tire. And it's like, well, what do we do? And so we, like, sat there and then jumped out, you know, when people drove by and said, help us, we're from New Jersey, you know. And people were very nice. We found, you know, that's the unifying thing, you know. We've been a lot of places, and I have to tell you, we've had amazing experiences with other people. People are so gracious and so into the fact that you've come all the way from the United States to visit them and see their place and learn about, you know, their environment and stuff like that. I mean, we've had very, very, very few bad experiences.
And you talk in the book about some things that can get in the way, even for seasoned travelers like you.
For a long time, I couldn't walk because I'd had double knee replacements. So before that, I had trouble walking. And then after I had the double knee replacement, one of them failed. So then I was back into that again where I was having trouble walking. And I still went and did a lot of these trips. You need to work with a good travel agent and tell them exactly what your limitations are. And believe it or not, there's a trip out there for you that you can do if you really want to do this kind of thing. You can do it.
Well, that did, Richard, you were about to say something?
Are you going to answer that?
Well, I was just going to say that I think, you know, in my opinion, creating memories is a very important thing. And, you know, when you get older and you have the time to do these things, that's, to me, a lot better than material objects. And I guess when we talked about the fact that we're ordinary people, you know, yeah, everybody has a limited amount of funds. And so instead of buying fancy cars or fancy furniture or whatever, you know, we try and put our limited amount of resources into creating memories, both for us in this case, and many times with our children, and that kind of thing. And that's where, you know, where we think people would do well to try and do that.
Thanks, Richard and Amy Lynn. Fantastic pictures in your book, The Sarcastic Lens, An Ordinary Couple's Photographic Journey Through the Animal Kingdom, available on Amazon.
Right, bye-bye.